Hi, and welcome to the Breadwinner Podcast. I'm Niels Brian Lowe, and each episode, I talk to a guest about how they're maximizing value from investments in technology like Salesforce and NetSuite. Yep, I know, a podcast about CRM and accounting software integration sounds dreadful. But Breadwinner is out talking to customers, to partners, and to technical folks every day about this stuff. Breadwinner are constantly amazed by the business value that's being unleashed in this space. So, we've recorded some of those conversations to share here. Full disclosure, this podcast is brought to you by Breadwinner, who provide products that integrate Salesforce with ERP platforms, accounting systems, and payment providers. But the purpose of this podcast isn't to sell products. If you'd like to know more, head over to breadwinner.com. Otherwise, do just join us for today's conversation. Welcome to the Breadwinner Podcast, and I am delighted today to welcome Alan Bebchik, who's the VP of Business Development and Partnerships at Inforge. Welcome, Alan.
Hi, Niels. How are you? Great to be here.
Well, great for you to take the time to speak with me today. And I guess the first question is, tell us a little bit about Inforge and what you guys do.
Awesome. Inforge, we're a Salesforce consulting partner. We're a global firm. Our headquarters are in Miami, Florida, in the United States. And we also have delivery centers in Latin America, one in Costa Rica, and one in Argentina. So we do high-quality Salesforce implementation using the nearshore model, mainly with clients in the U.S. We work mainly with edtech companies. We work for nonprofits. We help companies in life sciences, in manufacturing, how to use a solution or a platform like Salesforce to improve their processes. And that's what we do in every day.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the Breadwinner Podcast. And I guess my first question is what the big themes you're seeing at the moment are when customers are trying to connect their customer edge technology stack, you know, typically Salesforce, with back office technologies, whether that's, you know, accounting platforms or ERP systems. What are the big themes and movements you're seeing in the market at the moment, particularly with that nearshoring model?
Got it. So I think companies are trying to connect all the system, not for the sake of connecting system, but really at the core is data. When you're trying to connect systems, you're trying to connect data, and companies are trying to connect this data to have customer 360 view of their clients. I think in the past, where companies use different systems, data live in silos, so it was hard to track what was happening, what were like the buyer pattern, what's that customer journey. So I think now the shift with connecting all the tech stack is to be able to have a journey that is real time, that's synchronized between system, that's scalable and flexible, and that you can report and combine data from different data sources to try to understand what do your customers need and how can I action, how can I make the next best decision. And that's what we see now in the market, trying to be more nimble and really use data to serve the customers.
It's interesting you say that about data, because clearly Salesforce over the last year or so have been really pushing into this particular business issue you're talking about with data cloud. I think it's now their fastest growing cloud by revenues. And, you know, how are you seeing data cloud land with customers, and what kind of use cases are they using to address exactly the business problem you talk about?
Yeah, so I think data cloud, there's definitely a big push. But I think it's still in the infancy. It's still a new technology as an ecosystem. In order to implement data cloud, you need to be certified. You need to start doing that first project. So really, it's in its infancy. I think what companies are trying to realize is that it's important to have data quality and data democratization. So making sure that data is clean, is usable. So that first engagements are, how can we clean up shop? How can we make sure we have real-time data that's actionable? Once companies are able to get that first stepping stone in terms of integrating their system, making sure data is connected and data is clean, then it's to your question, what can you do with this data? Like, how can you extract insights and predictions for your business. And I think these are the use cases that we start to see now with our clients. I think for now, the most we see is what's called agents, or how can you automate, how can you use AI to improve an existing process. For example, if you are a doctor's office, instead of getting a file of a patient, having to read through the whole file and then manually type a few keystrokes of what you really need to pass through your system, you can use AI to read that document and get the information you need, for example. Or using AI in marketing, for example, to draft emails or draft campaigns and draft journeys. So I think we were getting that first layer. But I think over time, where AI is going is into autonomy and this what's called copilots. How can AI, based on the data, understand your client, start doing things automatically? And I think that's where the market is starting to move in the future.
It's interesting that question about AI, because you know there's a perennial question about, you know, is it hype or is it reality? And I'm always interested to hear whether people's customers are actually using AI now to drive business value, or whether they're still evaluating what the future might look like. I mean, I've seen so many use cases of developer productivity, for example, being enhanced with developer copilot type tools, but I've seen far fewer examples of AI actually being unleashed in the wild at the customer edge, interfacing with customers. What are you seeing?
Yeah, no, I think it's, I see similar trends. I think it's still exploratory. I think on one hand, leaders are still trying to figure out, what can I do with AI? Many times our clients come to us saying, I want to do like an AI project. And okay, what are you trying to accomplish? Like what are your pay? And I think for now, most companies want to do AI because it's sexy and it's the new shiny tool, and it's kind of everyone needs to jump into the AI bandwagon. But I think companies, and especially enterprise companies, they cannot release a model into the wild without making sure it works properly. So we don't want companies to hallucinate on the data or give a recommendation that is not applicable, or send the next step that makes total, it doesn't make sense for you, for example. So I think companies are now in an exploratory mode and trying to figure out, how can we use AI? There's definitely a push into how can we save, for example, labor costs, right? Like how can we use automated chatbot or AI engine so I can reduce the number of agents I have. I think Klarna is a good example that I think they use AI to reduce about 700 agents from their customer service team. So I think companies that really can crack the code of doing AI at an enterprise level, at scale, that can really either reduce costs or improve the top line, I think these are the companies that will start to double down and triple down in these initiatives.
I mean, we've all, you know, this talk about AI has obviously been massively ignited by, you know, ChatGPT and the LLMs particularly. One thing I've noticed is that some of those use cases for AI have been around for a while and have already been solved by AI technologies that existed before. I mean, an example that I know from my own career is, you know, image recognition technology to check for planogram compliance in retail environments. So, you know, large consumer goods companies checking that the retailers are putting their products in the right place in the shelf. You know, and interestingly, that kind of technology has been around for 10 years or so. And I wonder from your view whether all of this is brand spanking new and exciting, or whether actually some of those use cases have already been mopped up by earlier AI technologies that predate ChatGPT and the fanfare.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, I mean, the first models we've been using for years, but we don't realize is when we get recommendations on Netflix, for example. So every time Netflix is recommending you a movie to watch. It's a model, it's an algorithm that predicts based on the patterns, based on the data, what you watch in the past, of your interest, what might be the next best movie you want to watch. So we've been used to those type of models, predictive models, for many years, but we don't really consider those AI. I think now what AI with models like ChatGPT and Llama and Gemini on Google, all these different models, is bringing that same capabilities that Netflix was doing to the enterprise level. But I think what's core and I think what's going to be really a differentiation in the coming years is data. Because with models like ChatGPT, for example, that are open source, if you want to use the model, you need to, as a company, you need to share that data with ChatGPT, for example, with the whole world. So I don't think many companies, especially at the mid-market or enterprise level, are willing to share all of their customers' data, all of their historic data available. So I think what we're going to start to see is companies that have all this data in-house use closed models that are specific to their business to sell their client base. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing in the marketplace probably moving forward.
I mean, that is a massive challenge. I mean, in a technical level, if one thinks about, you know, a relational database or a system built on a relational database like Salesforce, there's a location to the data. You know, you can point to it in a row and a column. It's an attribute on an entity, and so you can put a sharing and visibility architecture over the top of it because you can point to the physical location of that data. Whereas inside an LLM, there's no concept of physical location, and sort of binding those two things together, you know, exactly as you said, bringing customer data and then taking it into a model or using a model on that customer data. It's a real tricky interface. And I know Salesforce are trying to tackle this with their, you know, trust layer, as it were. Are you seeing customers actually deploying this kind of technology and this interface between the two?
Yes, absolutely. And this is exactly what Data Cloud is about, is how can you bring your data not just inside of Salesforce, but of all the systems that are outside of Salesforce, and how can you harmonize the data and connect the data among all the systems. Once all the data across all your systems is connected in Data Cloud, then is the time that you can start putting the LLM on top and start finding those recommendations for the business. So I think that's exactly what Salesforce is trying to do with Data Cloud there.
And do you have many folks who are Data Cloud certified who are already doing Data Cloud projects?
Can you repeat that question again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. I mean, do you have many folks in your organization who are Data Cloud certified and doing Data Cloud implementations for customers?
We do, but nothing is, we haven't done, call it a transformational project at this stage. I think it's more helping customers with, I wouldn't say that with the low hanging fruit, but more of what are some of the tasks that you can automate that will free up time from our team. These are the type of projects we're engaging today with clients, with one of our clients in the medical space. We're, for example, using a data scraper to get data from their patient, and then using AI to recommend what might be the output in terms of what they need to send to the companies that file the, like, insurance claim, for example. So we're in this, call it, early stages, like in our journey now with how can we reduce cost, how can we reduce overhead by introducing AI in a business environment.
Super interesting use case. I mean, I guess one other big question I have for you is, you know, AI has been this massive trend over the last few years, obviously. And, you know, the other big thing that's happened in our market that we all live in is the sort of post-COVID impact. I don't know what your experience is, but, you know, we're out talking to customers all day, every day. And, you know, there was this massive boom through COVID as customers spent wildly on SaaS technologies and the services to support them. And then there was this kind of counter swing the other way as companies wildly contracted and stopped spending money on anything. You know, the pendulum swings backwards and forwards, but where do you see that pendulum at the moment?
Yes, I think that the pendulum is starting to shift to the other side. I think with COVID, everyone thought it was doom and gloom. The world was going to end. Supply chains were going to collapse. People were going to be stuck at home and it was going to be complete chaos. That clearly didn't happen. If anything, the opposite happened, because companies, if you were a tech company, you had to figure out how can I be more tech forward and how can I be more remote and how can I be more connected with my customers. So all these companies started to invest, and there was pent up demand in investing in a CRM solution, investing in different tech stack. And then all this pent up demand, companies saw, wow, the economy is booming. In the US, the government printed trillions of dollars in the economy. So companies were like, we need to hire more people. Everyone is buying, everyone is investing. We're going to be growing like this for the next 20 years. So let's hire, let's try to grow as fast as we can. That's what happened for the past maybe like two years ago. Now companies realize, hey, this what happened in COVID is really there was money printed that causes inflation. There was pent-up demand that companies, everything that they bought, they're probably not going to continue buying at the same rate. So now we're starting to see the opposite. Companies are doing layoffs. Companies are now more cautious in terms of what's going to happen in the economy. So I think in terms of a macro level, things are slowing down. But I think there's structural changes from COVID that are going to remain. I think remote work is here to stay. I think the mandate of going back to office, I don't think that's going to happen. I think people are used to now with having a more balanced lifestyle and having a hybrid schedule. So those type of things might be structural here to stay. But I think the question mark remains and in the economy, what's going to happen now in this environment, and especially with AI, which we've been talking about for the past few minutes. I don't think AI is still mature to make a change instead of jobs and unemployment. But I think that the real fracture from COVID is all the money that was printed, or everything that was, all these companies that overhired, that are now maybe correcting or overcorrecting. So we'll see if this overcorrection is big enough that will slow down the economy and that might put us in a recession.
Well, thank you, Alan. It's fascinating to hear your views, and it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I greatly appreciated your insights into data, into Salesforce's data cloud, into AI, and the long-term structural impact of COVID. So thank you very much, Alan, for joining us. And for all the listeners, please do join us again for the next edition of the Breadwinner Podcast.
Thank you, Niels.